I will open the Senate Interim Committee on Rules for January 12, 2010. Senator Burdick is in the committee room next door, and I'm expecting Senator Farioli shortly. Joining me here is Senator Metzger and Senator Atkinson. The first item on our agenda is a work session on introduction of committee bills. There are two bills. They are in their preliminary stages in both cases, but these are the principal bills that this committee will have during the February session. Can the committee staff go over the bills, basically what's in them at this time?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have two LC concepts. LC 55 has two provisions in it. One is related to Senate Bill 326, which we passed in 2009, and the section particularly pertaining to cross-nomination voting. There was a requirement in that measure that required the Secretary of State to report on the process not later than October 1st of 2010. We have pushed back that date to March 31st, 2011. The second provision of LC 55 is related to ballot measure 56, which was passed, a constitutional amendment that was passed in 2008 by the voters, which is the constitutional amendment that eliminated the double majority requirement on local property tax measures when submitted to voters during a primary general election. The ballot measure did not include the language to amend the affected statute. LC 55 puts that language in statute. And then the second concept is LC 88, which is a proposal to amend the Oregon Constitution to require annual sessions of the Legislative Assembly.
Okay. And if I might comment on both, introduction of committee bills does not necessarily mean that you support the bill, merely that we are just introducing it for consideration during the February session. You will note that the annual sessions bill is blank in many areas, and that will be one of the items of our discussion. And that obviously we do not know where each member ultimately will be voting on that bill at that time. The other bill, the elections bill, is somewhat of an omnibus bill. There may be other amendments that come forward on the bill, but we're trying to keep the bill non-controversial as much as possible. But there are a number of things related to elections that we think we should probably address during the February session and trying to get as broad support as we can. Now, did you want to explain any of the tiny changes that are going to occur to 88?
Yes. Members, we just received a new copy of LC 88. I want to highlight two changes. On page one, we deleted the section that requires the Legislative Assembly to come in the second Monday of January. And then on page two, at the first line where it says a session may be extended to five number calendar days, we deleted the number five. That is the difference between this one and the one that you were sent yesterday.
Is there a motion on introduction of legislative concept 55?
Mr. Chair, I would move legislative concept 55.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the... Do I have to go by this text?
No, you do not.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, motion passes. Is there a motion for introduction of legislative concept 88?
Mr. Chair, I would move legislative concept number 88.
Senator Atkinson has moved adoption of legislative concept number 88. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, motion passes. We will now go on to an informational meeting, and I'm going to call up Mr. Ryerson and Ms. Martin. This is an overview of Oregon demographic trends. My understanding is this will take probably 20 to 25 minutes, depending upon the number of questions people have. And that will actually conclude our business for here today.
Really?
Yes.
We're not doing any appointment stuff today?
No. We'll do it in session.
Oh, okay.
But while people are getting set up, I'll be at ease. I did want to state, while I have some committee members here, now I have another one. You probably have all started to see the list on the appointments. If people would let me know far in advance if they have issues or if they want something explored more, please let me know, because we will act probably on those in the first week of the supplemental session. Okay, I will now bring us back into order, and Mr. Ryerson and Ms. Martin, proceed in whichever order you've decided to proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. I'm
glad
Sheila Martin.
Here.
I'm the director of the Population Research Center at Portland State University. And with me is Charles Reinerson, who directs the Population Research Center State Data Center. So we're going to spend a little bit of time with you today to talk about demographic trends that are going to influence the work that you'll be doing over the next number of months as the committee discusses the redistricting process. But before I turn it over to Charles to talk about those demographic trends that may affect how the districts will be redrawn and whether or not we receive another congressional representative, I just want to tell you a little bit about the Population Research Center and how our work will be influenced and how we will influence the work that's going on around Census 2010. The Population Research Center has responsibility in Oregon legislation for two important programs. The first is the Population Estimates Program, and the second is the State Data Center Program. The Population Estimates Program produces after-census estimates, so estimates of the population of cities and counties in Oregon for years in which the census is not conducted. And they also offer assistance to the Census Bureau in its own work in estimating population in Oregon. They participate in discussions all year with the Census Bureau about how to improve estimates of population in the state of Oregon. And this is really important because it improves the accuracy of the census counts and those intercensal estimates. The State Data Center Program, which Charles directs, is the Census Bureau's main contact, main point of contact in the state of Oregon. And the mission of the State Data Center is to provide information and access to Oregon citizens for Census Bureau data. So Charles spends a lot of time working with the Census Bureau to make sure that people in Oregon can access and correctly use the data that the Census Bureau provides. As Census 2010 approaches, I want to just remind you of how important it is that we work with the Census Bureau to make sure we get an accurate count. As I'm sure you've heard, census data is used to distribute over $400 billion in federal funding every year for infrastructure and other kinds of services. So Census 2010 will help determine how much of that money the state of Oregon gets. And it will also determine whether Oregon receives a new congressional representative. At the packet that we distributed to you just a little while ago includes a summary of the process that the Census Bureau will be using for Census 2010 and also has some information about the State Data Center and a copy of the demographic information that Charles will be presenting to you. As Census 2010 approaches and once it's complete, the staff at the Population Research Center will have a variety of responsibilities as in addition to those that they normally perform. And those responsibilities include working with the Census Bureau to explain the process of data collection, why it's important, and how the Census Bureau keep data confidential, explaining the difference between Census 2010 and earlier decennial censuses. And those changes are fairly extensive, and so we'll be doing quite a bit of outreach to explain to people, like researchers and policy makers and nonprofits and other people who use census data to target their services, how the current data is different from previous versions of the data they may have used. And we'll also have to adapt the models that we use to come up with the between census year estimates for cities and counties. These models will have to be changed based on demographic patterns that change things like the average size of a household and those kinds of assumptions that are built into our models to make sure that those estimates are as accurate as possible. We'll also be assisting the cities with challenges to the official census counts. So that'll be an important function that the Population Research Center will be conducting. And finally, we will be supporting the redistricting process that all of you will be working on in the coming months. So with that, a little bit of background on the Population Research Center and what we do every day and what we'll be doing in relation to Census 2010, I want to pass it over to Charles Reinerson to be explaining to you some demographic trends.
We do have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Please proceed, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Great presentation so far. On this affiliates list that you've given me, does the Population Research Center and then some of these other coordinating agencies receive some of the federal funds that you were talking about earlier?
Can you speak to that?
No, it's a partnership that's in place in every state, and the affiliates don't get funds to do this. They They get resources from the Census Bureau, such as training, materials like the packets that you've been given, and they send us CDs, books, training material. Of course, now much of the information is available on the internet, but it's the degree. As a lead agency, we do encounter some, you know, time and costs related to being the state data center network. But the other agencies, basically, they have the data, and they're serving the public with a variety of requests. So if people, census data is just one of the things that they do. Like you notice their COGS or the employment department, they use this data in their work, and they need to understand it and have somebody on their staff who can explain census data maybe to other staff members. So it's kind of a beneficial relationship for both parties.
Thanks. Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. As I mentioned, a lot of this material came from the Census Bureau. On the right-hand side of your folder, all of these are Census Bureau-produced materials. And I'll highlight the top one that's got the flow chart of Census 2010. Basically, last spring, they canvassed the entire country, every address, sent people out door to door to make sure that their address lists were correct, update them where needed. And that work continues. Even though the canvassing is done, they're working with cities and counties to update addresses, new homes that may have been built since last spring, or to make corrections in those lists. And they have now opened 5 local census offices around the state that will be hiring census takers. The questionnaires will be mailed out in March, and you'll probably see a lot of promotion and advertising related to that, because the Census Bureau estimates that for every 1 percentage point that they can increase the mail response rate nationwide, they save $85 million in not having to send people out door to door. So they get somewhere in, depending on the state, maybe 70, 72, 74% of their forms back by mail. They've done research on past censuses and categorized places that they classify as hard to count. So certainly not every place has the same mail response rate. So they've hired partnership specialists, and they were able to do that some with federal stimulus money, hire extra partnership specialists to work with hard-to-count communities, working with nonprofit agencies and local government agencies to target those hard-to-count areas and try to promote the census and get that mail response rate up. If you don't send your form back by mail, they'll be sending an enumerator to your house. And this time around, there's only 10 questions on the census. You probably remember in the past the long form and the short form. Well, there is no more long form. That's being replaced by the American Community Survey, which could be a whole different topic for discussion. But the Census Bureau is collecting that data on an ongoing basis. So hopefully the 2010 census, being only basic questions about age, race, sex, household relationship, hopefully that will produce a better response and people won't have to wade through the long form. So besides the house, the housing units, you can see on this flow chart that there's people in group living arrangements, and that includes prisons and college dorms, nursing homes, and those people are meant to be counted where they live. So, but they're not. They're not able to do the mail out, mail back, so there are special methods for counting them. Also, as they say, unique living arrangements. So that includes the homeless. There's a night when they go and count the shelters and look for people visible on the street. They work through the summer trying to do this follow-up, and then the questionnaires are processed. And by December 31st, 2010, the Census Bureau is required to deliver to the president the population count of each state. So at that point, we'll know how many U.S. representatives each state has. And you may have heard, you know, we're close to getting a sixth representative. The latest estimates, the 2009 estimates, organizations who have been trying to prognosticate on this have said, no, it looks like we won't make it. State of Washington might make it. But it all depends on, you know, these are estimates that they're using, and how accurate are these estimates, and how good is the census count? You know, if our census count is complete, then as complete as possible, then there is a chance of us making that sixth seat. The rest of the material, the important thing too there is after that, by April 1st of 2011, they're required to send to upper and lower house and the governor of every state the counts by census block, which will be used for the redistricting. So December 31st, we'll know the population of the state, but probably sometime in March, we'll be getting a file that has the population over and under 18 by race for every block, and those usually conform to city blocks. So those are the building blocks that all elective districts are made from. The next page on the right-hand side is just specific to Oregon, has some dates about the flow of census operations in Oregon, followed by a handout that the Census Bureau prepared called What Elected Officials Need to Know About the Census, and you can look at that at your leisure. I figured it was too appropriate not to include that for this group. And then finally, a page out of the Federal Register talking about the redistricting process, and then a map of Oregon showing what areas the five local census offices cover. And there's one office per congressional district, but the areas that they cover are a little bit different than the congressional district boundaries themselves. So if you're interested in knowing, you know, what office covers your portion of the state, you can look at this map, and on the back there are addresses and phone numbers for each of the local census offices, and the phone number for people who are interested in getting jobs as census takers. And I understand there will be about 5,000 census takers hired in the state of Oregon, roughly 1,000 in each of the five local census offices. On the left-hand side of the folder is material from our office. First is the State Data Center affiliate list that Chair Devlin inquired about. And next is some slides that I'm going to project up here showing the relative change within the state of Oregon, which may give some indication of what's to come. Because we do our annual estimates, we have our 2009 estimates out already. And that's just 9 months away from the April 1st, 2010 census date. So this may give us a pretty good indication of within the state, which counties have grown faster or slower than the state. Turns out the state has grown about 12%. Since the 2000 census, and only 8 of Oregon's 36 counties have grown faster than that. So you can see Central Oregon, Jefferson, Deschutes, Crook, Morrow County, in Jackson County, and then the three in the Portland area, Clackamas, Washington, Yamhill, have grown faster than the state average. Others have grown slower. And defining that a little more narrowly, the dark red there for Deschutes and Crook have grown lots faster than the state, over 40% growth in those two counties. The dark tan color are the other counties that have grown somewhere between 12 and 20%, whereas the light yellow are the counties that have either lost population or have the slowest growth, and the goldish color have grown but not quite as fast as the state. So overlaying the U.S. congressional district boundaries on this map, you can see that most of the districts include some faster growing and some slower growing counties, but we can't really tell from this map, you know, what this means for the entire district. For example, east of the mountains, most of the counties have grown slower or lost population, whereas the Central Oregon and Morrow counties have grown faster. So we combined all this, the county information at the congressional district level, and there's only four counties that are currently split among more than one congressional district. So we're able to add up the county populations. We don't do small area estimates, so we've used a simplifying assumption that within those counties that are split, the growth has been evenly distributed within the county, so allocating the same growth rate to each of the congressional districts. Adding up all those populations, we estimate that districts 1 and 2 have grown about 15%, so they're faster than the state, and districts 3 and 5, somewhere between 10 and 11%, only slightly slower than the state growth, whereas District 4, Southwest Oregon, has grown quite a bit slower than the state. So if we don't get that sixth seat, this map might give you some idea about how those five districts might have to expand or contract after the 2010 census in order to equalize the population.
I think they're still there. I don't think they're still there, though.
A little less definitive, we did overlay the state Senate boundaries.
That one's missing and my house.
And the state house boundaries.
What?
My house isn't in that one anymore.
And there's the house districts. So, you know, they're smaller, so we can't really get a good handle on where within each county, within each district, how they've grown. But obviously the ones in Deschutes County, for example, are likely to have grown a lot faster than the state. So that's what we brought to share with the committee, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Just a couple of questions to begin. The commentary we've heard in the background is that people all give their estimates, but that we're 15,000 to 20,000 people short of actually meeting the criteria to get a sixth congressional seat. I don't know if anybody wants that war of having a sixth congressional seat or not. But that seems like an awfully tiny number to get down to. I mean, it almost depends on how well you do the census in the state of whether you make up that difference.
That's right. It depends a lot on the total U.S. population, what's happening throughout the rest of the country, because since it's all relative.
The other thing is that during the recession in the early 1980s, we had a lot of out-migration. I don't see really much out-migration occurring now in Oregon, largely because there's no place to go in terms of a better economic outlook. What are we seeing in regard to immigration, out-migration?
Well, that's right. We're not estimating that there is out-migration like we did in the early 80s. But in our latest 2009 estimates, the in-migration has slowed from what it was. And so probably if we had, you know, the talk about a sixth seat started ramping up around 2006, 2007, when we were growing a lot. You know, our employment growth rate exceeded the nation's, and our population growth rate well exceeded the nation's. If we had continued on that track all the way to 2010, then we probably would have gained a seat. But since we have slowed, Maybe people aren't moving out, but there aren't as many people moving in as there were. So that makes it a lot less likely. So it's going to be close. We'll find out December 31st.
The last question I have, since I haven't seen your 2009 up until this meeting, what's the total population growth in the state between 2000 and 2009?
Oh, in numerically?
Yes.
Well, 11.8%. It's about 400,000, rounding to the nearest 100,000. It's
13,000 percent at district.
Oh.
Yeah, 400,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Extended district has to be. Mm-hmm. Okay. Last time our numbers were, I think, 57,058 or something, and 14,000 something or other. Now they'll be about 12,000, probably higher, 12,000, 13,000 higher. Additional questions? Yeah.
I have one I've always wanted to ask. And I know the modeling for census is different than standard deviation based on a random sample, but what is the level of confidence that a census produces when you get the sample? I mean, obviously there's an error rate to getting it right, but is there a percentage of confidence that comes with the census?
Well, of course, the 2010 census won't be a sample. It'll be a
census.
A complete count.
Right.
But there is, that said, you know, there is undercount and overcount. There will be people counted twice, and there will be people who aren't counted. It may amount to 2 or 3%, you know, based on the history of previous censuses, and that's why, you know, as Chair Devlin said, you know, the accuracy counting everybody might make a difference in terms of getting that sixth seat. If the rest of the country were not counted perfectly and Oregon were counted perfectly, then maybe we would get that sixth seat. Of course there's going to be variation in every state.
Additional questions? Well, thank you both for coming here today. I'm sure you'll be back before the committee again in the future. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else for the good of the order, members of the committee?
Okay.
With that, we're adjourned.